Hi everybody, the George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
This is what I call freedom. Well, I wanna say, I wanna tell you, I wanna say it. When you can do what you wanna do and go where you wanna go and live where you wanna live and love who you want. You wanna join?
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, okay. All right, everybody, thanks. Thank you so much for your kind words, for your thoughts, your inboxing, your thoughts on the show and everything. I know it's some negativity out there, but I just hope if it is negativity about the show or anything I do, I hope it's constructive, not just hate, you know. So welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. I'm on the north side of the city. We're near the lake. I'm in my studio. It is beautiful. It's wonderful. It's a great, great first day of summer. Yeah, it's the first day of summer. And it feels like it's been summer for a few weeks now. But this, according to the calendar, is the official first day of summer, June 2017, June 21st, 2017. If you're podcasting this show later, it's a later show. All right. For the first day of summer, it is beautiful. It is wonderful. We were out this morning, out and about doing what we usually do every day. And it was just gorgeous, just beautiful. It's wonderful to be alive. You know what I'm saying? And it is so great. And I hope it's wonderful and pleasant and kind where you are, no matter where you are in the world. Let it be a wonderful day. Okay. And treat people nicely. Okay. My guest today is the one and only Leslie Nolan. All righty. And as always, commentary on the George Wilder Jr. Show, as a lot of people know, the bullies are winning. And it's sad, but they are. And you have to give them their props. You know, the bullies, the liars, the folks who are with the falsehoods and everything, they are winning. But, you know, winners can only prevail for so long and then they will become losers. So keep the faith out there, everybody. Keep the faith and keep fighting for what is right. Fight for what is right. And, yeah, keep the faith. Keep the faith. I have to tell myself sometimes to also to do that, to keep the faith. And other people around me try to tell me to keep the faith and make sure that the faith is always kept on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the show. It's always, I think the show is refreshing. Every time I do the show, it is totally refreshing. And every show is like my first show. And I want to be the best. I guess I'm like the late Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson always wanted to make his latest album always better than the album before. And I can understand it. Every show that I do, I try to make the current show better than the previous show. But sometimes, you know, it works and it doesn't work. You know, it depends on the guest on the show. Hold on, everybody. I got the answer.
Man whose presidency would eventually end in disgrace with his impeachment for obstruction of justice. After firing the person running the investigation into him at the Department of Justice. But here's what I want you to know. We got through that tumultuous time.
Welcome back to AM Joy. It was the Hillary Clinton her supporters have been waiting for. Clinton unplugged at her alma mater, comparing Donald Trump's win to that of former President Richard Nixon, who had just taken office in 1969 when Clinton became the first student to give the Wellesley commencement address. This week offered even more signs that the current president has tried to interfere with the FBI's investigation of Russia's meddling in the 2016 election, an investigation that's now looking at Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, as a person of interest. Among several bombshell reports in the Washington Post just in the last few days came news that Trump made separate appeals to the Director of National Intelligence and to the Director of the National Security Agency, urging them both to publicly deny the existence of any evidence of collusion between his campaign and the Russians. Both men reportedly refused to comply. Joining me now is Evan Siegfried, Republican strategist and author of GOP GPS, Richard Painter, former chief White House ethics lawyer under President George W. Bush, equal rights attorney Tamara Holder, Paul Butler, professor of law at Georgetown, and MSNBC justice and security analyst Matthew Miller. Thank you all for being here. So I want to go through and I want to start, Paul Butler, with the definition of obstruction of justice. And this is from Cornell Law School. It says that obstruction of justice is defined as whoever corruptly or by threats or force or by any threatening letter or communication influences, obstructs, or impedes or endeavors to influence, instruct, or impede the due administration of justice. And it says persons are charged under this statute based on allegations that a defendant intended to interfere with an official proceeding by doing things such as destroying evidence or interfering with the duties of jurors or court officers. In your view, does Donald Trump doing the following things, and this is element three for my producer, sorry I'm jumping around, asking Jim Comey to pledge his loyalty to him, then firing Jim Comey with Jared Kushner's push to do so after he didn't do it, asking the DNI to certify there's no collusion, asking the NSA director to certify there's no collusion with him in Russia, and then reaching out to Flynn to say stay strong when Flynn is a person of interest. Does that look like obstruction of justice according to the statute? Paul Butler.
As a prosecutor, I'm looking at a pattern of conduct. Corruptly impede an official proceeding. Corruptly means you know that what you were doing was wrong. Well, you know what you're doing is wrong when you're meeting with the FBI director and you ask the vice president and the attorney general to leave the room so you can have a private conversation about give my boy Mike Flynn a break. You look at a pattern of conduct where, again, you reach out to the intelligence directors to give Flynn a break, and they say, no, we can't call off the FBI. And then you go to the FBI director. He says, no, I can't do that, and I can't show you any loyalty. And then you fire that director. And then, Joy, after all of that, you know Flynn is under investigation. You give him a call, and you say words to the effect of, man, I know the feds are after you, but keep your head up. The struggle is real. Give me a break. I've seen obstruction of justice convictions on less evidence than this.
And Matthew Miller, you also have sort of extraordinary information coming out of some of the officials, two of the sort of recipients of these overtures from Donald Trump. Admiral Mike Rogers addressed the staff of the National Security Agency. This is unusual for information like this to come out, unusual for him to do this full sort of briefing that would become public. This was in the Observer. Admiral Rogers took the unusual step of addressing the entire NSA workforce to tell them what transpired with the president. Rogers reportedly admitted that President Trump asked him to discredit the FBI and James Comey, which the admiral flatly refused to do. And he stated, there is no question that we, meaning the NSA, have evidence of election involvement and questionable contacts with the Russians. That's extraordinary, Matthew Miller.
It is extraordinary, and we've seen the president obviously call the director of the FBI. We've seen him call the director of the NSA. We've seen him call Dan Coats, the director of National Intelligence. I think the big question about other people who might have called, you know, two people who haven't talked about their interactions with the president yet with respect to this case. One is Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, and one is Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general. It's hard for me to believe that with the president being so angry about how this case was being handled, that he was calling the people in the intelligence community, that he also wasn't calling Jeff Sessions, his friend, maybe his closest ally in the administration, and complained to him about how the investigation was handled. And that is key because Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein obviously both signed off on the firing of Jim Comey. So I think one of the questions we're really going to have to ask, and it's going to fall to Congress to ask Sessions and Rosenstein when they're up there in their regular appearances, what conversations did they have with the president? What conversations did they have with other people in the White House? And if he was complaining to them about the way Comey was handling the investigation before he fired it, I think that is another piece of evidence that goes to his intent in making that decision.
And Richard Painter, you know, David Frum, you know, I was on with him on The Last Word the other night, and he made what I think is an important point, that we are framing this as legal versus illegal rather than adding the question of whether or not these things are even baseline ethical for a presidential administration, regardless of whether you're able to prove the crime of obstruction of justice, that as a political and ethical matter, these are problematic. You, as former White House Ethics Counsel, would you have ever authorized a president of the United States to even do one of these things, namely usher the attorney general out of the room so that the president could have a private conversation with the FBI director who's investigating his campaign?
Absolutely not. This is a clear evidence of obstruction of justice. We've also had several administration officials lie about their contacts with the Russians. And now we hear that administration officials and the transition team were trying to establish secret communications, encrypted communications with the Russians. And all I can say is that if President Obama's transition team had tried that, President Bush's team would have made sure they got locked up, and they would have told the president-elect, you could pick up your men on Guantanamo Bay on January 20. I mean, this is treason. This is a violation of federal law for people to be communicating encrypted messages, negotiating with the Russian government before the president takes office. I am amazed that anyone on Capitol Hill is tolerating what is a combination of obstruction of justice, Russian espionage, collaboration with Russian espionage, and now violations of the Logan Act. A very, very serious situation for this administration.
And Evan, it does beg the question, where are the resignations Where is the outrage on Capitol Hill? Richard Painter makes a good point. If anything even close to this had happened in the Obama administration, Republicans would have immediately begun impeaching the president of the United States.
There is no accountability. Let's be honest. President Obama was very smart in that he never met directly one-on-one with the FBI director, be it director of
Making the world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. All right. As you know, that the Senate is trying to push Obamacare, repealing Obamacare through the Senate, pass it without reading it, passing it without letting Americans know what's in it. And that's not right. They're trying to get this legislation through without thinking that we're looking or paying attention. While we're focusing on the investigation into Trump, the Republicans in Congress are trying to sneak this bill through that's going to throw over 23 million people off health care, off their Medicaid. This is just unbelievable. And now they're saying the Republicans in Congress are saying that the Democrats created Obamacare in secret. And that is just simply not true. There was nothing secret about the American Care Act. Nothing whatsoever. It was out there in the open. Obama allies were adamant about being against the insurance companies. You know, some things weren't true that they were saying, but it was not like you can keep your own doctor and whatever, see whatever doctor you want and stuff. Premiums wouldn't go through the roof. Well, those things can be debatable, but it was not, Obamacare was not, and I repeat, it was not done in secret as the Republicans are claiming. These guys are just trying to give themselves an excuse for throwing 23, maybe 24 million Americans off their health care. Medicaid hasn't gotten its money and will not get its money. So therefore, you know, Medicaid, throwing 23 million people off of healthcare, it also affects the doctors. It affects the clinics. You know, the doctors are not getting paid. The money is not coming in. They can't pay their bills. It also affects the doctors as well as people who needing to see those doctors. So this is just crazy what they're doing. And they are going to be successful with this. Do you know why I say that? Because the Republicans, they run and control everything. The Democrats can make they can bitch about it. They can argue. They can debate it. But that's about all they can do. They can use a lot of lip service, whatever you want to call it. But that's it. The Democrats don't control anything. They can't really stop the Republicans from doing damage to the country. And one of the things I love about the Republicans, when they're doing damage to the country, they find a way to say, to tell the American people that it's good for the country. We're going to throw 23 million people off their health care. They're going to die. But it's good for the country. It's good for America. I mean, this is what these people think. And it's just wrong that they keep on winning like this. These are some scoundrels, they're bullies, they're liars, they are going to be thrown out of office, hopefully, maybe in 2018. I say maybe because somehow the Republicans and their bullying kind of ways, it's paying off for them. They're winning their butts off. Democrats can't buy a win, you know, and they are on the right side of the issues. One of the things I've learned about Democrats is, and I'm not a Democrat, nor am I a Republican. One of the things I've learned about Democrats is when they are in power, and they were in power back in 2010, Obama was president, and they couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle being in power. They bitched with each other. They couldn't compromise. They didn't like each other. They were talking about conservative Democrats, all in the party, conservative Democrats. You don't hear about conservative. You don't hear about liberal Republicans or progressive Republicans. You know, you don't. But we do have some conservative Democrats. You know, and I guess the conservative Democrats back in 2010 couldn't get along with the progressive Democrats and the liberal Democrats. And they made a debacle, and the Republicans took over. People voted the Republicans in back in 2010. And Democrats don't know how to handle it when they have power, because once they have power, they're out there. Their name, their individual names are known. Right now, there's 435 people in Congress, representatives. We don't know these people. We don't know all their names. We don't know who the hell they are. The only time we know their names is when they're being convicted of corruption or lying or doing something deceitful. We learn their names then. But just like in the Illinois legislature and some of these other legislatures, state legislatures around the country, people are in your state house. These representatives, you don't know their damn names. You don't know who you just know that they're there for one vote. Each of these people have one vote, you know, and in some cases, the majority rules. For the Republicans to tell a big lie like Obama done healthcare in secret is a shame. These people keep lying. One of the reasons I think the Republicans keep lying is because they get away with it. It works for them. It works. What can I say? Lying, being mean and rude, and just like saying that, you know, they do not support a living wage or a minimum wage, and they get elected. They get somebody, the folks go out there elected. But you know what? I think if people are going to vote against their own interest, I mean, you know, it's a lot of Republicans. It's a lot of Donald Trump supporters getting Medicaid. They're on food stamps. And, you know, a lot of the people that they vote for are going to take away those things from them. They're going to also take away the health care from all of those grassroots Republicans who have voted. You know, it's a damn shame when people vote against their own interests. It's a shame when people vote against people, put people in office who are going to hurt them financially and in every other way. But they put these people in office. You know, I mean, this woman said that in Georgia, she won. Karen Handel or something. She won over the Democrat, even though it was a red state. It's a Republican state. The Democrat came very, very close to winning. So they can't be too proud of that. But in all, it's a win. It's a win. A win is a win is a win. No matter how close or how far behind, it's a win. But in a Republican state like Georgia, which I'm totally surprised that Georgia, I'm pretty sure the percentage of the population of Georgia overwhelmingly is African-American. I don't know how in the hell Georgia became a red state. Oh, yes, I do. People didn't vote. That's how it became a red state. When you don't vote, that's a vote for a Republican. I talked about this yesterday and the day before. And let's get back to the big lie Republicans are using to defend their health care bill. They're lying on Obama. One of the things I wish Obama would do, because since he's been out of office, since he has not been president, the Republicans have been lying on him left and right. they have been using him to lie on to pass their hurtful bill. I wish Obama would come out of hiding, come out of wherever the hell he is, come out from under the bed and defend himself and say these people are lying, because, you know, he has to stand up. I mean, his legacy is hard, and he's just letting it and he's just letting them tear it apart. He's not confronting these clowns who are using him, who are lying on him. I mean, they talked about him and his wife when they were in. When the Obamas were in the White House, oh, man, the Republicans talked about them like dogs. I mean, Republicans really, really, they were calling Michelle apes and you know, Obama was a Muslim. I mean, they really, really bullied and talked about the Obama family. And once again, Obama did not come out and defend the names that they were calling. And people said, well, Obama's he's got too much class, my ass. When somebody is talking and defaming you and lying on you, you better get out there and defend it. If somebody's saying awful things about your family, you better get out there and defend those things, or if you do not, it's going to get worse. And even worse than that, people are going to start believing that crap. Obama, so they're lying on him again right now. And I'm pretty sure he's going to stay in hiding. He's not going to bring his butt out. I've heard all the excuses to why people defending Obama for not defending himself against these lying attacks, that's coming from these current crop of Republicans in Congress. And I just don't understand it. I mean, there's people who disagree with me, you know, on this Obama not defending himself against all of these while he's out of office on all of these lying attacks coming from the Republicans. Okay. And they keep saying Democrats did the same thing with Obamacare. They did not. That's not true. Okay, that's a lie on Obama. Okay, and a lot of people wanted Obama to join the resistance. There are people out here who are saying they wished Obama, they wanted Obama to be another Martin Luther King, to rise up for not just African Americans, but for all people who are being depressed by this current administration. That's not going to happen. That Obama is not, he's not a Malcolm X. He's not a Medgar Evers. He's not a Martin Luther King. He's none of that. You know, I think Obama did. One of the things, okay, I have never been a fan of President Obama. I think I was a fan when he first was running for office, campaigning. I think I was a fan then because I thought there was going to be a game changer, but apparently it wasn't, you know. So I was I quickly unbecame a fan of Obama, you know. So no, Obama is none of that. And he'll tell you that. But they're lying on him. And I mean, if it was me and somebody was lying on me constantly like these Republicans, I'd come out so fast. I couldn't care who disagreed, who did not agree. I couldn't give a damn who liked it, who didn't like it. You don't lie on me, you know, like this and get away with it. But apparently, you know, it's nothing to President Obama. You know, 347-857-1762. Republican leaders in Washington have come under withering assault for the way they are putting together their bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which is known as Obamacare, specifically for writing legislation almost entirely behind closed doors with zero Democratic input and with plans to hold a vote mere hours after finalizing the language. In other words, nobody has seen this. It's in secret. It's in quiet. And they don't care about Democratic votes. They don't care what the Democrats think. They don't care what you or I think. They don't care what their own constituency think. It's their party, and it's the party bosses that the Republicans in Congress are adhering to, not the voters who put their asses in office. You know, so it's trying times here. And on top of that, folks, they keep winning. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Let's go right here. All right. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey, George, this is Leslie Nolan calling.
Hi, Leslie Nolan. Leslie Nolan calling. How you doing? I think we've been communicating on an email kind of thing like that. And
Thanks
for coming on the show. Thanks for doing the show. Thanks for being a part of it. Okay. Tell
sure.
the people
thanks
out there, the audience
me.
Out there, what? No problem. No problem. Tell them, give them a little bit of your bio and what do you do?
So I work with creative entrepreneurs who've lost their mojo and inspirational vision, and I help them reclaim their power so they can find the courage to create their great work.
Wow, that's great. And what exactly is mojo?
Mojo. So if you look at the definition of mojo, it's a power that may seem magical and allows someone to be very effective and successful. The origin of mojo probably is an African word. It's similar to Fulani Makoo medicine man, or the magic attributed to or associated with juju. But now it's just more commonly said, and it kind of means like sex appeal or talent.
So how do you get someone who lost their mojo to regain their mojo?
That's a good question. So I take them through a little journey to kind of get back to themselves. And we do this with something called intentional creativity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, mojo is literally the desire to do things. It's the difference between waking up or waking through your day or sleepwalking through your day.
And it's
a crucial element when you set an intention for your life.
Yeah.
So if you have some kind of goal, you know, research shows that you can influence your own levels of motivation and self-control. So you got to figure out what you want to create and put your self-love and power towards that transition. And that starts you on your creative becoming.
Yeah, it's you're saying basically find the creativity within yourself and go with it.
Well, that's one way to do it. The process is something that you go internally for. Some people do it naturally. Sometimes when you're under a little stress or life happens or your life gets filled up with work and we lose our vision or some kind of health issue might happen, or perhaps, you know, you've lost a loved one. Lots of times we lose our vision and that's when we lose our mojo. So, I usually take people through a few steps to get their mojo back. One of them is, to set a positive intention, and that's important. And it's the way you say it. It's got to be in the present tense. You have to be specific. And you have to be positive.
Yeah.
So you start first with setting an intention. And then you have to create resonance, which is the emotion behind it. You have to resonate with you internally and emotionally. And you also have to practice gratitude. And this magnetically attracts your intention to you. So when we talk about resonance takes place when the emotions that you put into your life or your stories evokes meaning or responsive chord. So it's the capacity to share deep emotional states. This kind of starts in your brain. It's activated in the heart. And one of the definitions of resonance is a quality or sound that stays loud, clear, and deep for a long time. A quality that makes something personally meaningful or important to someone.
How do people react to what you do and trying to help them to be creative in getting their mojo back or and helping them be more creative in some ways?
Well, each person is very different. Their journeys are very different. There are different reasons why they've come to me. But what has happened is they've gained great results in their life. They have either changed their work so that it's more aligned to their zone of genius and their, you know, their divine purpose of why they're supposed to be here. For other folks, they've taken creativity as the main focus of their work. I was working with a retired executive, and she kept painting and painting and painting and painting. And this past fall, I helped her hang her art show for her first retrospective. And she's now selling her work in New York and New Jersey.
That's wonderful. That's great.
Yeah. So sometimes we just need to slow down a little bit and kind of listen to ourselves and trust our own voice within. And it builds up confidence in your own intuitive abilities and your natural power. And you kind of step into the life and the work that you love. And I love helping people do that.
Yeah, yeah. I do too. I love helping people, as you say, find their mojo. Because I do think everybody has a mojo. It's there. And you're there to help them to find it and to help them to actually find what they can be creative at, and they can go for that. How do you keep someone, let's say someone has mojo and suddenly they don't have it anymore. How do you help them to regain it?
Well, you know, it's really kind of coming back to that place where we go inside for some guidance. So I do a little active imagination, and that's a concept that was developed by Carl Jung. It's a meditation technique where the content of your own mind is translated into like images and it's personified as like a narrative. And that's the bridge that we use to connect, you know, our inside life to our outside life. We create an image through this imagination process in a painting. And it's through this process of active imagination where we're not exerting a lot of influence on the image. It just kind of unfolds. It's like watching a scene or a story. And as the image comes out, you know, sometimes it will actually talk to you and tell you kind of where to go and what to do. It's just like speaking to another aspect of yourself. So it's a very creative and fun way to get back in touch with yourself and your creativity. It's fun. It could be liberating for some people. It's a very peaceful process for those who might have gone through some stress. It's a nice way to just kind of slow down. And when you start painting and working with all these colors, you're activating all different synapses in your mind. And when you do some journaling, you're working with other aspects of your mind. And you connect both hemispheres of the brain through this painting and journaling method. And you create new neural transmitters that make new connections. And then you get kind of new perspectives on your life and how to solve problems. So it's very cool.
Yeah, it sounds cool. I mean, you were just describing it and talking about it so beautifully. Author, you are an author, right? Have you written a book?
Well, I have an ebook that I would love to offer and give to your listeners for anybody who's interested. It's called Creative Entrepreneur's Guide to Get Your Mojo Back.
Okay.
And that's for anybody who has lost inspiration.
Yeah.
And helps you reclaim your power so you can create your great work.
What kind of people do you think, as you just got through saying, who have lost their inspiration? Because I think there's a lot of people out here who have lost their inspiration, their drive, their get up and go. And their, you know, I think it's quite a few people out here who actually need that motivational pull to be creative and get out here and do things for them for themselves and stop giving so much of themselves to someone else and give a lot of themselves to themselves, if that makes sense.
Sure. Sometimes it's folks who might be stuck in a soul-sucking career that drains them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or it might be people who are entrepreneurial and they're confused as what to do now with their business. Or it might be somebody who usually had a lot of mojo, but it's not as strong as it used to be. Could be that just life threw you some curveballs and it's affected you, not only your life, but also your work. You know, so the benefits are is that you learn how to ignite your creativity. You access and find direction if you've lost motivation, if you lack clarity, or if you've lost inspiration. And you can identify powerful actions that will move you towards the life and business that you want. And you can discover the excitement of knowing exactly what to do next to create your great work.
Leslie, have you yourself experienced any of the things that you're talking about and that you're trying to give to people now?
Of course. Why do you think I'm teaching this now over and over again? Yeah, I had a series of transitions that some of them came like 1 year, next year, next year, next year. And then I had a series of things that happened to me all at once. So, you know, could you start back as, you know, as far back as 10 years ago, could be marriage, moving, buying a house, menopause, and then, you know, the whole economic crash, and then reinventing oneself, and I had a crazy tenant who destroyed my beautiful house, and then my husband and I wanted to start a family. We realized we couldn't do it naturally, so we started on the path of going through the Division of Youth and Family Services to foster to adopt. So that was a very uncertain process, but we knew we wanted to adopt. And then my dad got ill, and there's also so many dramas with my siblings all around it. And he passed. And there was so much drama and tumultuousness, and you can imagine a lot of sadness, that I started painting again. So I painted and painted and painted and painted and painted. And by that next fall, I knew I wanted to be just like my dad, who's a teacher, and my mother, who's a teacher, and step into more of my teaching abilities. For years, I've been a graphic designer, illustrator, and marketer. And I've always had a keen eye for anything visual. And gladly, I've been doing this work now for 6 years. And I absolutely love it. And I see how it's helped me, and I see how it helps other people.
You know what? There's nothing like taking your own experience from what life throws at you and making sure that or trying to motivate other people who might be going or have gone through some of the same things. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. And it is very fulfilling. A person sometimes makes a beautiful piece of artwork, but it's really about the process. It's more about the process than the product. You know, when you make a painting, you're kind of like going into another portal, another dimension. And there's something really exciting about that. And you don't have to have any previous experience to do this. I teach a step-by-step method. As a matter of fact, I'm working with one of my clients who I've done marketing 4 years ago. And now he has chosen to do a mentorship program with me. And his work is in, he's been trained as a physical therapist, and he has a fitness shop, and he teaches people about how hormones and nutrition and hydration help them with their health. So his entire life, even before all of his training, was sports, sports, sports. So he's really excited to try this. So he is, you know, a real newbie. And so we've started. It's a lot easier than he thought. So really excited to see what will turn out for him.
All right, Leslie, give my audience, tell my audience where we can find your book. Give us the title again and give us a website or a blog where we can come and get some more information on what you're talking about.
Sure. In order to get my ebook, you can reach me through email, Leslie at LeslieNolanDesign.com. And the ebook title again is The Creative Entrepreneur's Guide to Get Your Mojo Back. And for any of your listeners, I would love to give them a free 50-minute mojo breakthrough session. They could pick a time that works for them. And they would sign up at www.mojo.acuityscheduling.com. And Acuity is spelled A-C-U-I-T-Y, scheduling.com. And they could pick a nice time that works for them. And if they don't see a time that works for them, they can email me. And we'll figure out a time to get their mojo on.
Get your mojo back. Yeah. And
get
on
it back. Yeah.
And, I think it's, I think this is beautiful. I think it was, it's wonderful. And I'm going to go to your website too and see if there's anything there for me that, you know, because a lot of times, I mean, anybody can lose their mojo. I mean, it doesn't have an age limit or nationality or anything.
Any age. Yeah. Right. I mean, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there's something about creativity that is timeless, right? Mm-hmm. So I see my five-year-old boy, who we did adopt, by the way, who's so beautiful. Yeah. He loves to paint and draw. Or it could be my mom, who's 84. She loves to paint and draw. And that wasn't her first love. Writing was her first love. She was more of a writer and teacher, an English teacher.
Leslie, are you planning on writing another book?
You know what? It's a good question. I think I've got a very, very long book in me.
Okay.
And I have, let's just say, inklings of thoughts about starting that. Very interesting that you said so.
All righty. Leslie Nolan on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you for being on. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon. Thanks for inviting me.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Leslie Nolan on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She's talking about getting your mojo on and basically being creative. We will be right back. Stay with us, folks. right. Senator John McCain. Senator John McCain here. He's saying, I was just talking about how the Republicans are trying to ram this health care bill through. I think they've rewritten portions of it. I haven't got the data on that yet, but we're going to check it out later and see if we can. But anyway, Senator John McCain, of Republican of Arizona, and I know it's hot in Arizona. He was speaking to reporters earlier this week, and this is, I'm quoting him. We used to complain like hell when the Democrats ran the Affordable Care Act. Now we're doing the same thing. I think they're not doing the same thing. I think they're doing it a lot worse than Democrats have ever done it. And, you know, I just think it's just wrong for these people to do this, to ram this stuff through and sneak it by us, the Americans, us Americans, and say it's good for us. That's what the Republicans have always done so far. And they win. I mean, they keep winning. They keep beating the hell out of Democrats. Democrats, I do believe, have the right message, but they just don't know how to win like these bully Republicans. You know, I mean, if you can't, if you don't stand up to these Republicans, they're going to win. They're going to run right over you. Democrats have to learn how to stand up to these Republicans. And we, the people of America, it's millions and millions of us out here. We should not just stand by and let these few white people in, and I'm not racist, I'm just saying what I see, these white old men in Congress, honorary, gripey old men, tear the country apart with these, sneaking these bills through without anybody ever reading them, or nobody knows anything about them. And the Republicans, like I say, these are representatives in the House of Representatives. It's about 425 minus 200 or so Democrats, representatives, gives us around 213 Republicans. They control the House of Representatives. And it's a mess. It's a mess, you know. So they're just... we just have to come to the point where we said we're not going to take anymore. I mean, you can't, a lot of us, you really can't expect other people to go out here and fight your battles for you. Sit back, lay back, get fat, and expect other people to go out here and fight your battles for you. You know, so you have to get out here and fight your own battles, you know. Get up off the couch, get some exercise, you know, and get a grip and start get out here and fight your own battles. If you see something is wrong with your country, say something about it. Just like if you see, you know, crime on the street, or you see domestic violence, or say something about it. Do something about it. You see these clowns in the White House disrespecting the White House. Say something, do something, you know. Don't sit back, lay back, you know, and drink pop and stuff like this while your country is falling apart. The first priority should be America first, not politicians, not Republicans, not Democrats, but America first. America is the people, not those clowns and fools in the White House and in Congress. America is grassroots people out here. You and I going to work every day, building buildings, building roads, you know, skyscrapers, new technology. It's grassroots people who are doing these things, creating in the arts, writing books, acting, doing television shows, radio spots. Just grassroots people are doing these things. We are the ones who are building America, not those clowns, not those rich clowns in Washington, D.C. They're tearing it down as we build it. They're not giving and refusing to give us the resources to keep building America. America is is here because of us, not because of the Republicans in Congress. We are the ones that keep America afloat. We are the ones. So if something is not right, something is not kosher, something is smells like a rat in Washington, we the people have to do some house cleaning. But I want to say this. If you're going to vote for against your interest, then you deserve what you get. If you're going to vote for people who's going to take away your health care, then you deserve to have your health care taken away. If you're going to vote for people who is not going to fix your roads and streets and infrastructure, then you deserve to get that because that's what you voted for. If you vote for people who's going to take away your SNAP benefits, then you deserve it because that's what you voted for. If you're going to vote for people who are going to take away your home, your car, your job, then you deserve it because you voted for those people to do those type of things to you. You deserve it. And there's no doubt about it. You should suffer the consequences for putting people in office who are assholes. You deserve it. Okay? I mean, you put this woman in office in Georgia, Karen Handel or something, and she clearly stated in one of her television interviews that she did not support a living wage. A living wage. Therefore, she's all minimum wage. And some of these guys and girls and Republicans in Washington, they want to eliminate the federal minimum wage. And the federal minimum wage is only $7.25. Now, who in the hell can live off that? And they want to take that away. And you voted for people to take that away. I mean, you know, I mean, you got kids in high school, they need a summer job and, you know, $7.25 an hour. It's OK. It's something that they can make while during the summer while they're out of school. You know, they won't even have that. They won't even have summer jobs. There won't be a minimum wage because the Republicans want to take away the minimum wage, period. She said that she did not support a living wage. That means she doesn't give a damn if you have a job or not. She doesn't give a damn if you starve to death or not. She doesn't care about your children. But you voted for her, Georgia. You voted for her. You put her in office. So you're going to reap what you sow. And then she's going to try and take her belief that there should be no livable wage to the nation. She's going to try and, you know, get that implemented all around America. I don't know if it's going to happen, but Georgia, you got what you voted for. Someone who does damn about you. And she stated it. It's not just me saying this. This is the George Wilder Jr. show is not fake news. I mean, this woman said it on air that she did not believe and she does not support a living wage. That means that she doesn't, you want a raise or something. You're making $7.25 an hour. You want a raise, you're not going to get it. Now, who in the hell can live off $7.25 an hour? $7.25 an hour. Put it that way. I'm trying to make it as clear as I can because I want you to understand. The federal minimum wage is $7.25. Now, who can live off that? And she doesn't support anything above that. She doesn't support $7.26 an hour. She doesn't support that. And that's a shame. That's a poverty wage. You can't buy a car with that. You can't get yourself an apartment with that. You can't even get a slum apartment with that. you can't do anything with that. You know, I mean, you know, probably go to the store and buy some junk food, maybe. But that's it while you're sleeping in a box. So, Georgia, you voted this woman in. You're going to get what you, she's going to give you what she says. She's going to keep her promise. She's not going to support a living wage for any of you people in Georgia. And the thing is, I believe the percentage of people in Georgia are African American. And they're living with a Republican governor. And they're living with a Republican representative who does not believe in a living wage. The woman is crazy. The woman is batty. But she won. You put her in office. Shame on you, Georgia. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people in Georgia that didn't vote. There's probably a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses in Georgia and some people with a lot of who are in some of these religions, they don't vote. And that's a shame. And, you know, they don't vote. And so I always said, if you don't vote, you don't exercise your right to vote, then you probably shouldn't be here.
Oh, George, what's the matter with you?
You know, we're all Americans, and whether you like it or not, we are under a tyrant government. You know, you just can't stand there and just let these people in government run over you. I know there's a lot of people out there who aren't into politics. They don't know politics from the backyard over there. But anyway, you know, but they do know that things are not going well. So you have to, you know, you have to fight for your country, fight for your happiness, fight for what is right, not violently, but fight at the ballot box, you know. And we can do this if everybody in America get together and fight at the ballot box, do the right things. But if you vote for the wrong people and they take away everything that you have, then good, because you deserve what you get for knowingly voting for someone who is against all morals and all of your interest. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. All right, it's been fun. I want to thank her again. She was always fun. She was a fun person to have on the show. Hopefully we can have her back. I think she's been on the show once before. I've had so many people on the show. It's kind of getting kind of crazy. But anyway, the George Wilder Jr. Show is here. All righty. Okay. All right. Always making the world a better place. Leslie Nolan, thank you very much. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. I do believe that. I truly do believe that. And the George Wilder Jr. Show is on Facebook. We're on right here on Block Talk Radio. Follow me. Click that thing. And it is so beautiful, folks. I'm in my studio, and I have this great big window in front of me, and people are just walking by, and they're waving and all that kind of thing. It's fun. It's just fun. And but we're living in some dark times here, folks, and we got to make some changes. But if you put the wrong people in office, then you have to suffer the consequences. You have to suffer the consequences. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened. taken away, but we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently.
The wealthiest family in America gets a $52 billion tax break as a result of the appeal of the estate tax.
That's correct.
Tell the American people why you think that's good when you cut Medicaid and you cut programs for kids.
We don't cut Medicaid. We're talking about repealing Obamacare. The results
that you
mentioned.
Throwing 23 million people off of health insurance. That's right.
Which is a CBO number that I think you just agreed could be wrong.
I didn't agree to that at all.
Listen, if he said, did he say we don't cut Medicaid?
Yes.
That is just a lie. That is a certifiable lie. Now, listen, you can debate the 23 million number. You really can. I mean, you can debate, or maybe that's people that choose not to be on accepted. I understand those arguments, right? I disagree with them, but I understand them. But $850 billion is real. Those are real cuts. Why does he keep lying? Why do the Republicans keep looking into cameras and lie?
Because
who do they think is stupid enough that you can't read the numbers in the Wall Street Journal? Okay, maybe you call this fake news. You can't call this fake news if you're conservative. It's very clear you're cutting $850 billion in Medicaid for the poorest of the poor. If you want to do it, embrace it. Don't lie about it. Stop lying about it. We know you're lying about it. We're not stupid. And you Republicans in the House have been lying nonstop about what you're not going to cut and who's not going to lose health coverage. Okay? We're not dumb. I understand. There has been a coarsening of political culture. I understand that Donald Trump lies all the time. And you're thinking he got away with it? Right? And so you can get away with lying? You can't. All right? It's just like Bill Clinton. David Geffen was right. He was an unusually good liar. Bill Clinton somehow survived being a liar and lying every day. Hillary couldn't. You can't. Stop with a coarsening of political culture, okay? You know what the meaning of is, and you know what $850 billion is. So do not go to Capitol Hill and lie through your teeth every day. That's all I got to say. It is so maddening. This is my party. My party is going straight to hell politically.
Today, the president will release his full budget for fiscal year 2018. From all indications, the Trump budget will seek deep cuts to programs that help the middle class and working America while providing more handouts for the rich. It will cut to the bone programs that help the elderly, the poor, while adding money for an unnecessary, ineffective border wall that continues to have bipartisan opposition. And to make all of the math work, the Trump budget makes entirely unfounded assumptions about economic growth. In short, the Trump budget takes a sledgehammer to the middle class and the working poor, lavishes tax breaks on the wealthy, and imagines all of the deficit problems away with fantasy math. The Trump budget exists somewhere over the rainbow, where the dreams of Mick Mulvaney, Paul Ryan, and the Koch brothers really do come true. Of course, these dreams are a nightmare for the average working American. We expect the Trump budget will make deep cuts to the National Institute of Health and Centers for Disease Control. Let me ask, how many people in America want to cut cancer research when it's done such good? Well, President Trump evidently does. It's his budget. They kneecap research that develops new cures, damaging our ability to contain or prevent the outbreak of disease. We're all living longer and healthier, in part because of this research. We want to stop it, cut it back, so we can give tax breaks to wealthy people who, God bless them, are doing great already. We expect the Trump budget will gash programs like Meals on Wheels. I even read in the paper this morning that the head of the Freedom Caucus said that even for him, some of these cuts were too great. The SNAP benefits, helping, making sure no kid goes to bed hungry in America. This is America. We've always done this. And the Children's Health Insurance Program, cruelly ripping away the lifelines from Americans who need the most, the children, the working poor, the elderly. We expect the Trump budget will cut transportation funding, education funding, and programs that help students repay their student loan debt. One of the great problems in America, the debt on the backs, the burden of average kids getting out of college, middle-class kids. We're going to make it harder? What is going on here? What is going on in the White House with this kind of budget? Our college kids, when they get out, they need to be able to live real good lives and not have this burden of debt on their shoulders, which they're struggling under now, and we're going to make it worse. We also, this is amazing but true, the Trump budget will break President Trump's promise to protect Social Security and Medicaid from cuts, both of them. He promised over and over again he wouldn't cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Medicare is not cut here, but Medicaid is, and Social Security is. On Social Security, the budget will cut Social Security disability benefits to many Americans who have earned them and paid for those benefits. And you can say, well, doesn't cut old age benefits for the elderly. Wait. If they get away with this, the elderly will be next on the chopping block, because the goal, it seems, of this budget is cut everything you can so you can give even more tax breaks to the wealthiest people. The Koch brothers type of thinking. It will also seek hundreds of billions of dollars, additional cuts in Medicaid. The budget cuts Medicaid on top of the cuts that were made in the House bill of Trump Care. And what'll that do? Medicaid has become a middle-class program. 60% of the people in nursing homes, Medicaid funds it. What are we going to tell a couple with three kids? Say they're 40 or 45. They have three kids. They're saving for college. They're struggling. But at least they know that mom or dad who needs help is in a nursing home. This budget passes, that family is going to have a terrible choice. Take hundreds of dollars a month out of their own budget and give it to pay for the nursing home, or find a place for mom and dad to live, maybe at home, but maybe there's no room in the house. Awful. That's what they're doing. And who else will it hurt? Opioid addiction. Much of our progress that we're trying to make on opioid addiction comes through Medicaid, because they give treatment. We need both law enforcement. I'm a tough law enforcement guy, you know that. But we also need treatment. I've had fathers cry in my arms because their sons, in this case it was both sons, were waiting online for treatment and died of an overdose. What a burden a parent has to live with. We should cut that and cut it to give more tax breaks to the rich. It's in America turned upside down, this budget. And how about rural areas? You know, I represent New York State. It's known for its big city, New York City. We have other great cities upstate. But we also have the third largest rural population in America. So I'm very familiar with rural America. In many of my counties in upstate New York, and this is true throughout rural counties, throughout America, the largest employer is the rural hospital. And that hospital is the only hospital around for miles and miles and miles, if God forbid you have a stroke and you got to be rushed there to get yourself better. Well, go talk to our rural hospitals. These rural hospitals, which are the beating heart of our local economy, employing hundreds, sometimes even thousands of people. Well, nearly one in three rural hospitals today are at risk of closure. It's more expensive to run a rural hospital. People in rural areas are entitled to the same health care, so that means buying all these fancy machines. In an urban area, those machines can run 24/7 and get the reimbursement back. But in a rural area, they can't. There's not that many people. But they get some help. The Trump cuts to Medicaid would cause a whole bunch of these rural hospitals to close and many more to lay off employees, hurting health care in rural America and hurting jobs in rural America, places that need help. The Trump budget, on top of Trump Care, which seeks more than $800 billion in cuts to Medicaid, would decimate health care options for rural Americans and pull the plug on many of these rural hospitals. And some of my colleagues will be talking more about that this morning. When you add all of it up, Mr. President, when you add all of it up, the Trump budget is comic book villain bad. And just like comic books, it relies on a fantasy to make all the numbers work. It's the kind of budget you might expect from someone who is openly rooting for a government shutdown. Haven't we heard the president say that? It's the latest example of the president breaking his promises to working Americans. This budget breaks promise after promise after promise that the president made to the what he called the forgotten America, the working men and women of America. And he said he'd help them, and this budget goes directly against them. In a speech to Congress, for instance, earlier this year, the president called education, quote, the civil rights issue of our time. But his budget guts vital school programs, our future, our kids. He said, quote, cures to illness have always been plagued, this is the president's quote, cures to illnesses that have always plagued us are not too much to hope, quote. But his budget slashes funding for NIH and CDC, where they do this research. And he said, quote, save Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security without cuts, have to do it, unquote. But his budget would cut Social Security disability insurance and end Medicaid as we know it. The Trump budget is one giant, brazen, broken promise to the working men and women of America.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was just some of the reality that's going on in the United States of America. And it's a shame that we have people in the White House who are not representing us the way the Constitution says that they should. And in my estimation, they are breaking the laws of the Constitution and they should be thrown out of office. But that's just me, you know, because like I just said, Karen Handel, I'm thinking that's her name. She won in this special election for Georgia. As I was saying before, she blatantly came out and said that she did not support a living wage. She did not support you making enough money at your job to make a decent living. She did not support that. And she won. she won, and she's going to stick to her guns as not supporting a minimum wage in Georgia. And my thinking is that a lot of people who are in Georgia are, there's a high percentage of African Americans in Georgia. So, you know, so you guys that are wage, you will be making minimum wage until there is no more of a minimum wage. She is not going to support anything, you know, because $7.25, that's the, I don't know how much you're making. I don't know how much the minimum wage is in Georgia. I can find it out quickly, but as of now, I don't know. But I do know the federal minimum wage is $7.25, $7.25. And, you know, it's pathetic. But the minimum wage for people in the city of Illinois is $8.25. Now, the governor of Illinois, Bruce Rauner, he thinks that's too much. Actually, he's trying to, he wants to, or he at one time he thought, or he said about getting rid of the entire minimum wage. There will be no minimum wage, which is in Illinois, I believe it's $8.25, just a dollar increase from the federal minimum wage, which whether it's $7.25 or $8.25, those are poverty wages. No one can live off of that kind of money. It's nothing, when especially if you're living in an expensive town like Chicago, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, you know, these expensive cities in Montana. I mean, they're all over. You can't, and things are constantly on the increase. You know, so if there are people making $7.25 or $8.25 an hour in the United States, they're either living with their parents or they're living in homeless shelters or sleeping on a bench somewhere, because you cannot. There's no way you can do that. I mean, rents in Chicago are, depends on how many bedrooms you get. It's over $2,000, sometimes $3,000 a month. Give me a break. You can't, and even the ones that are $1,000 and less, you will not still be able to afford it, because the minimum wage is too little. I mean, you go fill out an application for maybe a studio apartment or something, and they are on the rise. A lot of people used to go get studio apartments because they were, you know, a little bit cheaper. But studio apartments are expensive. They are expensive. It's no more cheaper. I mean, if it's any kind of dwelling at all, any kind of roof over your head, if you're in a building or condo apartment, you're going to pay. Studio, one bedroom, two bedrooms, and you cannot do that. You cannot do that on $7.25 and $8.25 an hour. You're going to have to be working two or three, four or five jobs in order to pay the rent that some of these apartments are asking you for. And if you go fill out an application for an apartment and if you put down there $7.25, you're not going to get that apartment, you know, so because you won't be able to afford it. I mean, the manager or whoever, will attest to that. So these people here who are, you know, it's just mean and nasty and just ornery, but you know, you got to do what you got to do. And living has just gotten harder for folks, and you know, just got to get a better job maybe, because you know, it's not funny. It's sad, but, it's true. Things are just tough and getting tougher in the United States.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall.
black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw. Heaven help us all.
It's always that possibility that in Georgia that these people, that the Republicans cheated. You know, they if this is proven that they cheated and got this woman in, money played a big part of it. It's cheating. Because I'm hearing now that people were turned away from the polls in Georgia and they couldn't vote. Anyway, thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We'll have more on this tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody. Clicking. Cheated.